Welcome to the Chrisman Commentary Daily Mortgage News Podcast. I'm your host, Robbie Chrisman. Topics on today's episode include S&P 500 transaction timing, an interview with FICO's Joe Siebert on the company's interaction in the mortgage space and how it handles feedback from lenders, and it's pretty quiet out there in the capital markets. Today's podcast is brought to you by Matic, the digital insurance marketplace built for the mortgage industry. Matic works with over 100 financial institutions to integrate home insurance shopping into the lending and servicing experience. Customers can shop over 50 carriers and find a policy in minutes. See how mortgage leaders can create a new revenue stream that boosts customer happiness today at go.matic.com/chrisman. Lenders are always working with money and doing their utmost to avoid scams. On a personal level, maybe not so much. Capital markets departments and hedging companies are very careful about trading mortgage-backed securities and whole loans at the best price, and timing hedges with lock volume. In the stock market, recent data highlights a significant shift in stock trading patterns, with approximately one-third of all S&P 500 transactions now occurring in the final 10 minutes of the trading session. This concentration of activity, driven by the proliferation of passive investing, is causing concerns about market liquidity and the potential for price distortions. For today's interview, I wanted to welcome to the show FICO's Joe Siebert to talk about the company's interaction in the mortgage space and how it handles feedback from lenders. He's VP of the Capital Markets and Mortgage Division at FICO, which is actually quite an interesting role.
How aware are you at FICO of kind of the chatter in the mortgage industry, what people are saying, the sentiment of originators out there?
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely aware, right? We'd make it a big focus to talk to the lenders, to get out there in the field. That's a big thing about what my team does, right? Is just out there talking to the industry, letting everyone understand all the details and ins and outs of how it really works. And I know there's been a lot of misconceptions out there in the past. So, I mean, we're excited, right, to take calls, work with people, work with lenders. But, you know, we hear everything, right? Whether true or not true, you know, we hear everything from our end. And, you know, we're just excited to be out there partnering, right, with great partners.
I want to get a sense of your interaction with the team over there at FICO as a head of an alliance.
When we're talking to clients, we're not upselling them stuff, like I said, right? We're just trying to work with them within the confines of what they have to help them be, you know, more predictive, originate more, and do better, you know, for their customers. As you think of, you know, 10T, to your point, right, the FHFA is moving the agencies there, you know, at some point in the future, but there's no reason on all your other stuff that you can't start using, you know, 10T today. And we see, you know, 5% lift in originations and 17% less in delinquencies when you're utilizing it. But what that really means is it's a tough market, right? Like, people are losing money on every loan. If you can get a couple more basis points in profitability on selling that loan or originating that loan, or, you know, 5% more in your buy box, and that's not, right, 5% lead gen, right? That's 5% of loans in your pipeline that just have cost that are not funding, that are now going to fund under the new score. So we're just trying to help with lenders. I mean, we empathize with the environment, right? Volumes are down, costs are up. Like, how can we help you make the most out of what you're doing? And that's really what I feel like the new score is helping customers do, right? We got Cross Countries doing a non-QM securitization with it. Cardinal's doing a VA securitization with it, right? They think they can get more value out of securitizing under this other score. Hopefully they're going to sell it for more. We'll bring that feedback back. But, you know, those are just some of the things we do with our customers.
So I will get to the 10T score, but I do want to talk pricing for a minute because it is kind of the elephant in the room. Your CEO, Will Lansing, he's a blog, and pulling directly from his most recent blog, he was saying how FICO began collecting approximately 60 cents to $2.75 per FICO score, which equates to approximately $2 to $8 total for all three scores out of a $40 to $70 or more tri-merge report and score bundle.
Will has letters out there, right? And Will's great. So I would recommend everyone goes out and, you know, reads those letters. But if you read the one from last year versus the one from this year, you'll see we took a lot of market feedback in what we did and made changes as a result of market feedback. Again, we encourage lenders, right? Come to us, talk to us, give us feedback. We are here to listen. We're here, you know, to work with you. And, you know, to Justin's earlier point, I'm not on the pricing side, I focus with the customers and we get all that done. So I can't speak to the ins and outs of it. Again, would defer to, you know, the open letter that's out there, but I am here to listen and bring all those ideas back from the industry on anything. And like I said, we're open to all the conversation that we have on that.
And so Dan asked, is how a score from a consumer facing service, such as a credit card company or Credit Karma, something like that, translates to a mortgage FICO. Is there any correlation and or predictive indicator that would give you a sense of what the mortgage FICO might be?
Yeah, that's a great question. And there's unfortunately a lot of nuance in that, which doesn't make it easy, right? We want to make it as easy for customers as we can. But there is some nuance. I mean, one thing we'll always say is, right, make sure that it says FICO score on what you're looking at. A lot of the things that you're looking at will just say educational score or, you know, a score like a FICO score. And, you know, we have a huge division that outreaches, does education. We do education, right, at schools. We do education all over the place, right? We partner with Chris Eubanks, the tennis player who goes in and teaches with us about financial education. But it almost does a disservice when someone's like, hey, here's a different score. And then it's not the score that they're getting used for approval on. The credit card companies are going to be different than some of those other sites. So we have a program called Open Access, and actually mortgage lenders can use it also, right? Anyone who has permissible use to keep repulling a score can publish that score, right? So like, again, just to use B of A, because I worked at B of A, not as a client standpoint, but right when I was there and I logged onto my account, I could see, hey, this is my FICO score. That's something from Open Access, right? So we provide that free to our lenders so they can provide their credit scores, the actual score, right, that's being used to make the credit decision to their customers. In addition, right, at myfico.com, you can sign up for free to see your credit score as well. And that's a good point on how does it relate to mortgage scores. So one thing I'll say is, you know, as a consumer, be wary if something is just educational or an estimate, because it will be, right, totally different because we didn't build it. So there's no way someone could correlate that to what we're doing, right? Even if they kind of use the same scale, then within FICO, right, the thing to realize is there's multiple versions, right? Every couple of years, we spend a lot of time and effort making new versions that are more and more and more predictive. To our earlier comment, right, the mortgage one hasn't been updated in, you know, 25 plus years. We call it classic FICO. On myfico.com, you can sign up, you know, for a bigger package and see all of your scores. And the mortgage scores are in there. Typically, what a credit card company is going to show you is version 8, which, you know, is probably not the mortgage version that's being used, but is the most prevalent version out there. And then hopefully going forward, they'll start showing version 10. But I would say as long as it says FICO, it's going to be directionally correlated. Just make sure the version is right, but be wary about other scores or scores that say FICO-like when they're not actually FICO scores.
What are the other features of the version 10 score that you think are important for the audience to know?
Yeah, so there's a lot of great things in there. I mean, one thing that's always been a misconception is like utility data. Utility data has been there since version 1. And other people are like, hey, we came out with utility data. I mean, we've done that since like the early 90s. So utility data is in there. Unfortunately, it's not always furnished to the bureau, so there's not a ton of it. But that's in there. The trending is big. Rental data is in there as well, right? We're big proponents that all rental data should be submitted. Luckily, you know, that's growing. It's still too slow, but it's a huge predictor of, you know, how you can look at risk. And obviously someone who's paying that big rental payment every month, it's probably their biggest expense, right? And they should absolutely get credit for that. So it picks up rental data and picks up a lot of other things that we want to make sure from like a gaming perspective, right? Things that didn't exist 25 years ago that exists now, right? There has been a lot of consolidation from, you know, high interest rate credit cards into personal loans. Well, you know, an older scores before that was something, you know, maybe you could try to play around with it a little bit. We understand that behavior now, right? And the model understands that, you know, maybe your risk is higher or maybe your risk is lower based on that. So there's a ton of other factors that were taken into account. There's more scorecards, more segmentation. And the other thing, which isn't necessarily a feature, but is really just because it's so much more predictive, you do see a much better distribution from a score standpoint, right? So way more on the low end, way more on the high end, and just more in between, just because we have the ability to say, yes, this person is here. We're more confident in that. So, you know, it used to, it didn't cap out at 800, but you had a lot of clustering around 800 in Classic. Now you really have a smooth curve all the way to 850. Better for prepay predictions when you can look at it like that. So just a ton of stuff from that standpoint. You know, new AI and ML that we have when we develop the tool. Obviously, it's a scorecard-based model because we want it to be explainable to all the regulators. But we do, right, double check it with AI and ML that we've been doing since the 80s. And, you know, we actually see if you were to use like a black box, unconstrained model, there's almost no incremental lift. And obviously, you can't do that for a regulatory standpoint, right? But we test all those things. So you run something completely unconstrained, completely unexplainable, and the lift over our 100% explainable scorecards is almost negligible, right? So we do double check everything with tons of AI techniques, which again, just make the score much more predictive as we go.
I kind of want to get your thoughts on how FICO feels about progressive underwriting techniques. It seems like you're incorporating a lot of those into your own scoring. And I'm not saying companies should give up using the FICO score and evaluating the creditworthiness of a borrower. But how much is FICO trying to take into account these new methods to, you know, stay at the forefront of the industry?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're absolutely looking at everything, and we have lots of other scores that look at everything also. So, you know, we have Ultra FICO, which will look through your checking account information and figure all that out. That's obviously a consumer permissioned score. We have a non-consumer permission score, FICO XD, which looks at alternative data. You know, those scores have been out for years and years and years, right? We're never behind the curve from a technology standpoint, right? Hundreds and hundreds of patents on all the AI and ML stuff that we do. These scores have come out before they were even buzzwords in the industry. So we do have a lot of things that look at that. The core FICO score, right, we feel very strongly that it should just be based off of the credit bureau data, because we want to be able to look at it. We want to be able to score it without the consumer having to permission extra data, right? It should be something that's quick and easy. It also provides, right, a commoditized way to look at risk across the globe, right? Investors in other countries, banks in other countries, people that are buying things, people understand what the odds to default of the core FICO score are. So we're not looking to add extra stuff into that score, but we absolutely have tons of other scores that use alternative data and do other things as well. And we're always proponents for score layering, right? Take a score, add other stuff on top of it, look at all those things, right? We want to be explainable and predictive while we're cutting edge. And by having multiple sets of scores, we can do that. And when you look at other industries, right, they do a lot of score layering from that standpoint. And, you know, the thing I always hear from banks is, hey, I have my own customers and I have my own data, and what I build off of my own proprietary data is more predictive. And my response is, I would hope so, right? Like, you have your own data and you should be able to build something, but what you can't do is leverage that, assign something to it, run it through the rating agency and have other banks understand what that means while you're buying and selling, right? The FICO score is one element, a very core, right, critical element to the whole mortgage ecosystem, but we're big proponents for, you know, layer other scores, layer proprietary scores, right? However you want to do underwriting. And I will say, you know, directly to that question, almost every one of those companies out there that calls themselves, right, a fintech that's doing like AI underwriting uses the FICO score as a base and just adds stuff on top of it. Now, again, being an AI guy and, right, our chief analytics officer will talk a lot more about this, but if it's not explainable, it's not okay. And if you can explain it a week later, that's not okay either, right? You need to be able to explain the decision when you're making the decision, which is why we have the scorecard approach. But, you know, we do have 40 plus countries worth of FICO score, 70 plus countries worth of software customers. So just a ton of work that we're doing across the board. But yeah, leveraging all sorts of other scores in addition to the core FICO score.
I was going to ask you about adoption of 10T in the mortgage industry. What's that like? And we'll layer it with Stephanie's question. She says, so is everyone using version 8 or most using version 5? How much do the versions make a difference for someone being approved?
Yeah, great question. Adoption has been great. Really, to Justin's point, I mean, there's not a barrier to entry, right? What we're doing with our customers is allowing them to keep pulling classic FICO because we don't want any kind of liquidity hits, right? If there's one investor that says, I'll still only buy classic, we want that investor, right, to be able to bid on those loans. So they're pulling classic in addition to pulling 10T. And if there's investors that want to pay up for those loans with 10T, right, by all means, but they're putting both scores on there. Now, they're not layering those scores together, right? They're not doing some kind of matrix. You're getting a decision off of Classic or you're getting a decision off of 10T. But what they're doing on the documents, the loan docs, is they're putting both, or in the securities documents, the distributions for both. So the investors can pick and choose what they want to do. So, yeah, I mean, we've had, you know, Movement, Cross Country, right? A ton of other lenders. We have over $110 billion worth of loans, you know, if you annualize it for the year, that these lenders will be doing, 300 plus from a portfolio standpoint. So we always tell people, right, look at your portfolio, repull the scores. You can then provide the scores to your customers, right? If you're a servicer, you can provide those scores free of charge to your customer so they can log in and they can see them. But adoption's been great because, you know, to the point there's no downside, right? If you could be more predictive, you absolutely should be. And, you know, what we talk to customers about is those cash flows are used in so many places, right? Everyone has a different use case. So are you trying to make your mortgage-backed securities, you know, worth more? Are you trying to make your MSRs worth more, right? Are you in a cash crunch and you're trying to sell your servicing portfolio, as a lot of people are? Well, if you value it with slower runoff, because there is slower runoff projected under 10T, right, it should be worth more. Or if you're marking them to market, right, every quarter, every month, right, is it worth more? Loan loss reserve, capital adequacy, loss forecasting, right, anywhere you're looking at a cash flow. So some of our customers are like, hey, I just want a couple more bips on origination on sale. Some are saying, I want to model it different. The adoption has been great. And partnering with all these customers has been great. I mean, I love being out there. We just had FICO World. Invite you all to FICO World next year.
Kevin wanted your opinion on what FICO can do to better explain scores to the actual consumer. He feels like the disclosure the consumer gets seems to remain cryptic and unclear to the average person.
Right. So obviously we don't make the disclosures. We want to be as open, right? Like I said, as open and transparent as we can, right? We didn't weigh in, as far as I know, on, you know, what those disclosures look like. But yeah, we are big advocates for customers being able to understand everything about their score, which is why we have the free version at myfico.com, right? Let a customer be able to log in, look through their credit score and see the reason codes and the rationale and why their score is what it is. The same with the open access program, right? Log into your bank, look at your FICO score, see what the reason codes are. We do a lot of work with credit counselors, helping credit counselors understand, right, how to interpret the score, how to work with their customers, right, to legitimately get them into a better position, right? Not just to game it, which, you know, you don't want to game it. That's not good for the consumer, but how to actually get that consumer into a better financial situation. So we do a lot of work with that, but I totally agree with the point, right? More customer information and more customer education is always better, you know, and as much as we can do to help with that, and would love other ideas, right, from him or others on how we can get out there and how we can explain it better. We do, you know, master classes on how to understand it. We do it for lenders. We do it for credit counselors. We do it for consumers. You know, we have all these different things that I feel like we're not good enough about vocalizing to the world, but we are here to help and we're here to take suggestions on how we can make it, you know, more clear and more transparent.
It was another light day yesterday in terms of economic data and any market-moving headlines. Focus was mostly on corporate earnings, and the market didn't move much through the completion of a $42 billion 10-year note sale. Even though the offering met weaker demand than Tuesday's 3-year note auction, we learned yesterday that wholesale inventories decreased by 0.4% in March, as expected, after increasing a revised 0.2% in February. Don't forget that mortgage applications rose for the first time in 3 weeks, as mortgage rates followed yields lower after hitting year-to-date highs in the prior week. Today's economic calendar is also sparse, though already underway. The Bank of England was out with its latest monetary policy decision, holding rates steady at 5.25% for the 6th consecutive meeting, but the policy statement laid some groundwork for a June rate cut. The U.S. calendar kicked off with the usual jobless claims, in at 231,000, higher than expected. Later today brings Treasury auctions, headlined by $25 billion of 30-year bonds. Freddie Mac's primary mortgage market survey, and remarks from San Francisco Fed President Daley. We begin the day with agent CMBS prices, little change from Wednesday, and the 10-year yielding 4.51 after closing yesterday at 4.49%. Let's wrap up with a joke and some housekeeping. What did the lazy boy say to his mom on Mother's Day when she was about to do the dishes? Relax, Mom. You can just do them in the morning. I don't think that's a very good joke.
Thanks again to today's podcast sponsor, Matic, the digital insurance marketplace built for the mortgage industry. Matic works with over 100 financial institutions to integrate home insurance shopping into the lending and servicing experience. Customers can shop over 50 carriers and find a policy in minutes. See how mortgage leaders can create a new revenue stream that boosts customer happiness today at go.matic.com/chrisman. If you have any questions about the podcast or sponsoring opportunities, send me an email at robbie@robchrisman.com. Visit robchrisman.com for more information on our industry partners, access to archived commentaries, and how to subscribe to the daily mortgage news and commentary. To listen to or download past episodes of this podcast, search Mortgage News on any platform you get your podcast from.